I get home, that I'm not sure of. There could be ways of preserving them. And I know that people do string them up, at least temporarily for them. Mm-hmm. I'm asking because of the brown I was asking you about, are about that big around, and I don't know the type tree, but I picked them up in Newtown Square area, and in order to string them, they had to be drilled. They're very, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
And also down south of Westchester in that area.
Yeah, down around there, down the media sparkle.
Right, yes. And they must be drilled in order to be strung because they're very hard.
I wonder if you'd soak them in water.
I tried to soak them. I thought I would like to plant some. Mm-hmm. And I soaked them for 4 or 5 days and nothing happened. They're just so hard.
I tried that too.
Did you? I wonder if we might send her some. They might be what she's talking about. They would make nice string beads, except they're maybe a little large.
Yeah.
You don't know what the size or...
No, that's all I was ever told. A bead tree.
Uh-huh. That would be interesting to try and find out about.
I sure was curious to find out.
Can you tell of any successes in finding things that you had heard about and wanted to find here?
Well, there was a fern type thing plant here. I finally did run into this fern, mm-hmm. and I've seen some along the roadside.
I think we all know about the mayor.
Yes, that's a thing too we call goofball. And that was a deadly poison that the captives used to eat, they said, when the government made us give the captives up. And rather than to go back, they said, those Lenape people were kind to us. And we don't know our people. We long since forgot them. But anyway, the government took them back to their people. And some of them had to pull up this, whatever it is, name is,
Mayapple.
Well, anyway, they said they would eat that. And they'd walk along the ways and just collapse.
Is it the root?
Uh-huh.
The root that they... Because you can make jelly of the right apple.
The root part. Uh-huh. So I finally got to see this, what the old people used to call goofball.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty plant.
Yes.
I like the leaves. We brought some home
from here in this area. And it's our window. It's real pretty, springtime. Pretty fast.
You got it.
Thank you. But I'm Ted Hetzel. Mark doesn't tell you my name, address, and all that.
Okay.
In recent months, not Native Americans at any other time in this country since the settlement of the West by whites. Much of what we get, of course, is limited, shallow, and sensationalist. But the brutal realities of life for Indians in this country should no longer be a mystery to us. Looking at economic and social indicators that are available, such as income and education levels, health, employment, and the availability and quality of social services, Indians are the poorest group in the country. Compiling this is a continuing assault on Indian traditions and culture. But not as ferment, unrest, and dissatisfaction of the most positive sort. The signs of that ferment can be seen throughout the country. We know that conspicuous landmarks, such as Wounded Knee, the Trail of Broken Treaties, Alcatraz. But there are stories of other arenas as well where the struggle is being waged without some of the conspicuous drama. Native Americans are stating in any number of native tongues, as well as in plain English, that they are asserting their human rights, defining their status, and struggling for survival. They are, in short, fighting for their liberation. The Spaniards should be heartened by this challenge of Native Americans. The American Foreign Service Committee, with its history of Indian work that goes back at least 30 years, probably longer than this. As now, as it has in the past, important roles to play in this changed climate. Those roles must be defined by the Native American communities themselves, within a collective framework of mutual respect. Our roles do not include those of a power broker for Indians, nor as an arbitrator of tribal disputes, nor as advocates of advocacy priorities in tribal deliberations. Our roles do include facilitating Indian-defined priorities, assisting in specific ways with contact and communications among Native Americans as well as with outside resource people, and communicating Native American concerns. This list is obviously not inclusive, and it's certainly subject to change and to revision. We hope today to get some flavor of the issues and activities in Native American communities. Wayne Rule, who was slated to be here and was on the program, because of illness of family, unfortunately, could not make it here. But we do have Sherwin Broadhead here on my left, who's former staff aide to Senator James Abarest of South Dakota, and who is currently working at the Institute for the Development of Indian Law in Boise, Idaho. And on my right, we have Mrs. Martha Grass, Director of the American Indian Referral Center in Marlow, Oklahoma, and who is also an AFSC community associate. So why don't we start with the show?
Thank you. Thank you.
I think you're all right. Wait, I think you're all right. Okay.
Considered a great pleasure to be here to talk to concerned people about something that I feel very strongly about, and something that unfortunately is not getting, nor has it got, the kind of attention from the federal government that it needs. Historically, the treaties and relationships of the Indian people, the Indian tribes, were with the federal government, and they have maintained that they should be there as there are solemn treaties entered into between the tribes, the governments of the tribes, and the federal government. But we have seen on the part of the federal government a long period of neglect. They have Congress has historically kind of pushed off to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. It's your problem to take care of it. Only a few spurts of interest in the federal government. The Indian Reorganization Act of 1934 was useful. Then the Disastrous Termination Act. It was labeled as freeing the Indians. Virtually destroyed a number of very small tribes and badly crippled several others. As Ed mentioned, there's been a renewed interest in this field, and I think a number of people's conscience is beginning to bother them about the way that Native Americans have been treated. I think we're all aware of the large land grabs, the way tribes were manipulated and sometimes outright coerced into giving up large quantities of land. We think of that as the distant past. But let me tell you, friends, that it is true today. Today, the emphasis is not on the land itself as much as it is the governmental control over that land, how the minerals underlying that land are used, and probably most importantly, the water for that land. Because most of the reservations that were created are arid, and without water, the land is useless and people cannot survive it. And now, water is becoming more and more precious, pure water. The large energy companies need this water for development of, through the gasification project process, to develop their coal. The coal industries, not only on the reservations, but in the Southwest and Great Plains. Indians have had to rely upon the federal government for the protection of their resources. And unfortunately, the trustee, as has been developed through a number of cases, has not been a very reliable source of protection. Nor is it today. However, it being the only source of protection, they still must rely upon it. My work with Senator Abarest has been to help develop a posture for the federal government through which it can provide these kinds of protections, the kinds of services that Indians want, and these can only be through some kinds of mechanisms where Indians can have a voice in the way these processes are carried out. SJ Res 133, sponsored by Senator Abarest, and now co-sponsored in the House, and is about to pass the
House of Representatives, and I'm quite sure will be signed into law, was created to develop this kind of a mechanism, whereby, through the American Indian Policy Review Commission, this very complex and complicated matter can be put into the kind of legislative language which will preserve what Indians already have and set up a mechanism for the continued protection. Now, this is designed so that it have both congressional input and responsibility plus Indian input. There will be 3 senators, 3 congressmen, 5 Indians serve on this review commission, which through a system of task forces would come forward with the legislative recommendations. The Congress of the United States will not take time to really deliberate and deal with these matters. It was very disappointing to me to see the kind of response you could get from senators who really had no conflict. Now, historically, you know, the Interior Committee is the mother committee for the Indian Affairs Subcommittee. And sitting on that Interior Committee are mostly senators from the West, who have, on the one hand, non-Indian constituents, people who want power from big dams, people who want water from big dams, people who run timber companies, who want Indian timber, the mineral constituents, people where there is a great conflict. So when the chips are down, they usually vote against Indians. But what disappointed me is the lack of interest in those senators and congressmen who do not have any kind of conflict and who have only the Constitution of the United States and its various laws to look to for their guidance. And the Constitution of the United States specifically gives the Congress of the United States plenary power to deal with Indian tribes. It's specified. And the courts have held that this is a solemn duty of the Congress to make laws to protect and determine Indian rights. And the pity of it is, many of these rights have already been determined and yet are being lost through maneuvers by federal government. I would point to one specific instance. The Pueblo Indians have probably been the longest history of irrigation on the North American continent. At least 2,500 years before the white man ever came to this country, they were irrigating on the Rio Grande River. Now, through the huge Southwest Water Project, there is litigation going on, of which they're not even a part. The water in the Rio Grande River is being decreed, and the ownership of the rights to use that water are being determined without the Pueblos even having their day in court. We've held hearings, we've attempted to put pressure on the Justice Department to include them, and they've been ignored. These things are going on today, Ken, and they're most disturbing. This Congress has probably enacted more legislation than any since 1934. But given the record of past Congresses, that really isn't very good. The outline for a lot of the present activity in the federal government comes, strangely enough, from a pronouncement from former President Nixon. There are a few things that I personally agree with him on, but through a strange set of circumstances, a speech was prepared, a message was prepared for him, and he sent it to Congress on July 8th in 1970. And I might read a few lines from that, because I think it is an outline that Indians look to very hopefully, I think, throughout the country as bringing about some change. It is long past time that the Indian policies of the federal government began to recognize and build upon capacities and insights of enlightened social policy. We must begin to act on the basis of what the Indians themselves have long been telling us. The time has come to break decisively with the past and to create the conditions for a new era in which the Indian future is determined by Indian acts and Indian decisions. Now, those are very fine words, and I think words that most people could agree with. But when you look at the performance, you find quite the opposite. Commissioner Bruce was the first commissioner appointed in this administration, mm-hmm. surrounded himself with some very active and aggressive young Indians who began to change the top of policies and even began to attack the structures in between, the area offices located throughout the country, some various agencies where the bureaucrats reigned supreme. However, the Trail of Broken Treaties presented a confrontation, and the government, the higher-ups in government, took the easy way out. And they fired Commissioner Bruce, or asked for his resignation, and his Indian team, and then set about to reorganize the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The way that the Bureau is presently structured, there's a central office, various area offices, and agency offices. Now, the central office comes under a lot of pressure because of Congress, and Indians have different rights, different ways of appealing to that central office and putting pressure on it. The same way with the agency office, very often the Indians can move in and force the superintendent to make certain kinds of decisions that the other way wouldn't make. But the office that's free from all this is these area offices, which are located in towns throughout the West that have, to a greater or lesser extent, a severe Indian prejudice. And so, under this plan that the administration took, in order to protect themselves, because they didn't want the issue raised in this strong way that it was raised in the takeover, in the Trail of Broken Treaties March, they dispersed the power, and they reorganized to give power to these local, these area offices. Now here's where the divergence from the President's message comes in. The Indian tribes, almost unanimously, came to the Secretary of Interior, the Commissioner of Indian Affairs, and said, we don't want that kind of reorganization. That isn't what meets our needs. Senator Averest, as chairman, took his subcommittee to Denver to a meeting at the National Congress of American Indians, where almost to a tribe, the Indians came forward and said, this reorganization does not meet our needs. What happened? The reorganization went through. Is presently set up. The kind of powers that bureaucrats can wield on people has to be understood to understand the importance of this kind of decision. One tribal leader was newly elected in the Southwest and had a terrific political campaign, and for those of you who are not familiar with Indian politics, the campaigns are fought and pretty vicious. Senator Averest has said, through his familiarity with some of these campaigns, that that ought to be training for us. You ought to have to go through one of these campaigns before you could run for president. They're a tough campaign. This gentleman won his campaign and became chairman of the tribe. He was called in by the area director and told, now you think you're pretty big because you won an election. And the people there might think you're pretty big. But we in the area office control what goes on. And if you want anything for your tribe, then you better do as we say. Now that is the way that democracy is thwarted throughout this bureaucracy. This man incidentally did not do as he said, and has been a very strong and forthright fighter for rights for his tribes and other tribes throughout the country. The Bureau of Indian Affairs needs to be drastically changed. But not only that, but the Congress has to be changed in the way it deals with these problems. You cannot continue to have the conflicts as you have in the Interior Department between the oil interests, the timber interests, the land interests, the water interests, under the same lordship of the Secretary of Interior and expect to get justice for Indians. There are too many more powerful lobbies than Indians can ever become. You can't have in the Congress a committee dealing with these problems at the same time dealing with the problems of Indians, which are distinct, which are private rights. There has to be some terrific changes. One of the things suggested by the President of the United States in this message I alluded to was an Indian Trust Council Authority, which would be a separate organization with a board of Indians directing it, which would have the power to go into the courts in the United States, federal courts, from the district court to the Supreme Court, and represent the cause of Indians. We'd have a staff of well-trained attorneys And this would be its only function. It would be able to go in when there were other federal government issues that were at stake. You see, a lot of the ripoff of the Indian property rights, and indeed the Indian's right to survive, has been from the federal government. If you look at a map of this country and find where all the large water reservoirs are, you'll find the Indian reservations. Because it was much easier for the Corps of Engineers and the Bureau of Reclamation, rather than set up a series of lawsuits of condemnation against private landowners along the river, it was much easier for them to locate their dams and their reservoirs on an Indian reservation, where all they had to do was march in to the Bureau of Indian Affairs office and lay on them a list of property types, description. And from then on, the problem was taken care of. And I submit that this is a pretty poor way for a trustee to conduct himself. I've spoken mostly about land and water rights. These are mineral rights. These are very significant because they go to the very question of survival of Indian tribes. And tribes as a group through which Indians can have a voice, through which Indians can have come up their own autonomy, and probably the only way through which their culture can survive. There are other very important issues such as health, education, and child welfare. We found in some recent hearings that one out of every four children, Indian children, born in the state of Minnesota in 1966, were adopted from their Indian families into non-Indian families. We found that the result of many Indian adoptions were not very successful. We found that white social workers are very often very disturbed by the cultural patterns and lifestyle of Indian people, and therefore dedicate themselves to removing children from that atmosphere. But it's a whole area where there has to be a lot of intense examination, and indeed action. We've asked the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare to develop what strength the federal government has in controlling state agencies who interfere, what ways they can assist tribes in dealing with this on a local basis. And I'd like to emphasize one very important part of this whole system. In the 1950s, when Congress set about to wipe out Indian tribes, the termination era, they were successful with the Klamaths, the Menominees, with numerous small tribes. And incidentally, one of the things that this Congress has done is restore the Menominee tribe to existence. And seems to be a trend back the other way from that disastrous era. But one of the things they have not done, during that period, they passed a law, Public Law 280, in 1953, which gave to the states jurisdiction over civil and criminal matters on Indian reservations. In other words, it took from the tribes their right to govern themselves. Not all states accepted this. South Dakota felt it would be too expensive. Arizona did not go for it. New Mexico. The state of Washington, the state of California, a number of states have moved in that direction. And in those cases, they have all but destroyed many of the tribes. There's now a bill in Congress, S-3552, which would give to the tribes the option of taking back their jurisdiction. This has, I believe, the support of all Indians everywhere. And it's certainly a reversal of that trend of destruction of Indian government. Before I talk too long, I would carry on.
Thank you. Now more questions.
Well, first thing I want to say is how. It's good to be back again here, looking down the bar in the old photo. Every time I endeavor to do something, I'll think about if I can't get it done, I'm going to go holler. I'm going to holler at the friends. So that's one reason why sometimes I get very brave and endeavor and bounce out. Maybe sometimes I shouldn't, but I do it anyway. And when I get here, I have to make something out of it. Usually I'll find my way out. So this afternoon, glad to hear all that he has said, the chairman has said, because I know he got in there in Washington, D.C., and I know he's come out of there with a lot of information for the Indians. So Where is that now? Because I don't think I'd want to work up there. Because if you work up there, you're by arguing with me, so I'd be incompetent. You know, let it feel that way. So, this afternoon, I'm going to bring back some of the community kinds of life that Indian lives. Because I live there, and I live with them, and I've been all over trying to see and trying to help other Indians in different states, all kinds of tribes of Indians. And it seems as though we all have the same problem, and we just don't know how to deal with it. But then, one of the things that we finally came up with, if we're going to get out of this rut, if we're going to get out of this trouble, we're going to have to do something ourselves. So from that standpoint, we've been organizing in every tribe and trying to find I guess they call us nuts and lunch. I don't know what they mean by it, but whatever it is, that's what we're doing now, because it seems as though that's the only way someone's going to pay attention to us. If we throw our fist around and stomp our feet and say, we're going to stay here, we're not going to leave, we're going to hear from you people and give us your reasons why we can't do this, we can't do that. Everything is don't do that, just like you would a little child. Every time we try to do something, don't do that. You can't do that. That's all we hear all day long. And then we are living under this BIA, Bureau of Indian Affairs, and then the children now call it, gave it a nickname, Bossing Indians Around. So that's what we know that for. So we're trying to get out of that kind of a situation, even in our communities. So young people are our best people to deal with. Old folks, they're just a habit. There's no way you can talk to an old elder person and say, we can do this to change. And they'll say, just go ahead and try to change. We've tried, and we can't do anything, so we're just waiting for Almighty God to call us. And that's the only time we're going to be happy. No one's going to bother us. So that's what the older people feel. So now we have young adults and young students, and even 3 years old of us. We're giving them workshops and telling them how beautiful we are and how great we are, and then we're going to have to do something about it. So we've built ourselves up in this kind of a... I don't think anybody else is going to tell us that. That's our, bossing us around. They're not going to tell us that. The channel is not going to tell us that. We call it from working on down to our Indian business committee's the government channel. And that's what's giving us a bad time. That's giving us a hard way to go, and to live is a fight every day for most of the Indians. Very, very low-income, depressed kind of people. It's going to take quite a while before they ever feel happy. They're not a bit happy because they see what's happening to them, such as he's talked about some of our natural resources. Oh, if anybody's going to get ripped off, it's all of the Indians. Now, there's a few agencies that our agent supposed to have a law degree and all, but I found out he doesn't have anything. He doesn't have conscience sometimes, or common sense. If they do anything about human beings, they're the one that signs us away, and he does our business for us, and first thing you know, there's a great big lake, our dad, flooding out some Indian homes and Indian land. And they give them a little money, and the money don't last. You know how it is, and the high cost of living. So they don't live on that kind of money very long. And they're out in the highway, out in the skid row, and nobody wants them. And even the family don't want them around, because they sold their land for days. You know, the government just has to give away for them. And so there's nothing wrong about that if we don't wake up and help ourselves somehow, some way. And our center, American Indian Referral Center, bless its heart. Poor little thing, it has a 3-room structure there. And then we organized ourselves there, and got ourselves some board members, and we've been going through a lot of workshops among ourselves, trying to get strong. I don't know if we either had to be crazy or we either had to be smart, one of the two, but I think we're crazy, because we're challenging our dominating race there, and saying that we're not taking any more offers. No, we're going to do it as we please, no matter what it costs. So we have a pilot program there called Right to Read, and we're getting this so-called education. And some of it's good, some of it isn't. And so and we want to participate in this education thing. So we hire our own Indians, and we're working on in that kind of fashion. And so our children are getting good education now. If I have to say it myself, I will, because they're be coming out of there with straight A's. And some of them made the superintendent's honor roll. And then just a little group of volunteer services there. We're trying to educate ourselves to do better than what other people said they were going to teach us to be. And so we're just trying to tell other people that we can do it too. If they can do it, we can too. We're given a little chance that we will. And of course, we get harassed. We get thrown in jail. I get shot at. And then the rest of my people get in jail, and I have to go bail them out one way or the other, or stay in the jail. They locked me in down basement not too long ago because I wouldn't leave. Because they had some of our young people upstairs locked up because they were trying to stand up for their rights. And then I tried to get them out, and we didn't have them, so I just stayed. And they locked their dead, and locked these doors, and go ahead. Go on, don't worry about me. I'll be here and open up the morning. So you don't have to use our law against them anymore. They make all the laws, and so I said, well, we have to back up here. And whatever laws that these people are making, we'll use that against them whenever they do something bad to us. So now that our business councils and our tribes are recognized leaderships, and then they're usually incompetent. know, some of them don't even get out of the county. They don't even know what's going on in the next county. But they put them in these positions, and it's hard to get rid of them because the government will work through them to whip us. They use them against us, but no, you can't do that. We tried and we didn't get nowhere and tried to discourage us. But happy God, a lot of times I go to Washington, D.C. and browse around, snoop around, and I'm busy making my own travel watchdog, seeing what's coming up next. And I go back and give information to our people, and then to our neighboring tribes, and then I go wherever they send for me, I go and give a little lecture. And look here, we can do